kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have another reviews episode lined up for you. A lot of good games to talk about. We're starting things off with Tim Heckabit.
Oh, man. Well,
yeah, we would always hope that they're good games. There might be a couple of stinkers.
Being very optimistic.
I know a couple of them are good, so we got some good games.
Okay, that's, yeah, SML Podcast. Some good games. yeah. Hi, everyone. Hi.
So, yeah, Tim Heckabit. Tim, how are you doing?
I have caught a little bit of, like, the end of summer sickness. I'm a little goopy. I took Mucinex, and it just makes my head feel like goop.
Always
but here
fun.
I am. Yeah, I'm good to go. It's not too bad. I kind of laid down for most of the evening before this, so I'm ready to roll.
You recharged? You're feeling fresh?
I picked up some charge. Let's not say it's a recharge. It's like, oh, my phone was dying, and I stuck it on the charger while I was, like, I don't know, in the bathroom or something like that. So, you know, I put, like, another 10% on me. That'll get me across the finish line for the day.
Hey, good enough. Whatever works, right?
Good enough. Just got it, yeah.
At least your wrestling championship wasn't stolen.
At least my wrestling championship that I know of. I should go check my championship chest to see if it's still in there. But I've not been to Longhorn in a while. I love how
Lord knows when you're on, we have to chat wrestling.
Yeah, of course. I like how Cody tweeted out that he prefers Outback. of course. Yeah, apparently, yeah, breaking news today is that newly minted AEW champion Chris Jericho apparently had his world championship belt stolen out of a limousine while he was at a Longhorn Steakhouse, which is just funny on just so many levels. I mean, that's a great-looking belt, too.
It is.
Yeah, and I'm sure, I can't wait for next week's Being the Elite, where I'm sure they'll make fun of the whole situation, because those guys just can't help themselves. But yeah, did you see All Out?
Oh yeah, I did.
Okay, you did see All Out. Yeah, it was another another banger of a show.
Oh, that ladder match! Holy shit, that
ladder that was
match.
Insane. That match, there was
like Lucha Brothers and the Bucks of Young going for the AAA Tag Team Championships. And that was a banger of a match.
Yeah, just like Nick Jackson getting launched over the rope through that table, like, holy crap. That was
apparently
insane.
He cut his hand open really bad. That's what I heard.
I believe it. Yeah. They said when they came backstage, everyone was like, are you guys okay? Like, are you dead? Like, are you going to make it through this? All right. So yeah, that was great. I did really enjoy the main event as well. Even though it was definitely a come down after that match. I mean, like the Cody Sean Spears match was great.
Mm-hmm.
The women's match I was kind of distracted during, so I need to watch that back again. But
it was all
right. Yeah. You know, I love the Jurassic Express. They're fantastic.
The triple threat match between who is it? Darby Allin, Joey Janela.
Oh, that was great. That was so
who's
much
the third?
Fun.
Jimmy Havoc.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, I have all Jimmy these Havoc. New names I have to remember in wrestling now.
Yeah. All these new characters I'm learning to love.
Like, very NXT's hitting USA in a couple of weeks.
Oh, boy. Scary.
What are your thoughts on that? Did we talk about that?
I think it was rumored last time we were talking wrestling, but, you know, it's scary because NXT has been in this amazing kind of Vince-free zone for, you know, 4 or 5 years now. Whenever they started the network, that was like one of the big reasons why I bought the network was to watch NXT. And, mm-hmm. and it's been my favorite wrestling promotion. So the prospect of it, like, being stretched Vince-ified. Out to 2 hours and possibly getting the touch of Vince is scary. You know, I hope that Triple H can, you know, they keep saying that, like, the rumors of Vince's involvement are being overblown and that Triple H is still pretty much going to run the show, so we can only hope. And also, you know, I'll say this. The silver lining to that is we're probably going to see less of, like, people getting, quote, called up to the main roster and then just disappearing into the ether, because they're going to be on
its own brand.
Yeah, they're going to have their own brand on TV. So, you know, they'll move around in, like, your draft or whatever. But I don't think it's going to be as much of a thing where, yeah, like, you get all these wrestlers that just go up to the main roster and then just disappear and or just horrifically misused, you know. And you might see who?
EC3, yeah.
Oh, that guy I seen jogging backstage after a certain title.
Yeah, holding a red cup.
Yeah, but you know, you might see, you know, maybe hopefully some of those guys will migrate back to NXT. Maybe some other people that just aren't being used will migrate back, like Breeze and Fandango.
Yeah, they've been doing pretty good in NXT.
Yeah, so they've been getting to wrestle where people see them, so there is that.
Very true. Very true.
It's cool. I hope that it's needless for them to put that on TV to compete with AEW. I feel like that's a crazy knee-jerk reaction thing, but if it results in more good wrestling, I can't really complain.
And I'll say now, it'll be easier for me to watch it because it's easier for me to fire up the DVR than to fire up the network. Find an episode.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do if it's not on the network. Like, that's,
I think they said it's going to be on the network on Thursdays.
Oh, okay, well, then that's fine because I never watch it live anymore anyway. So I'm set.
That's what I heard.
I'm set. I'm good. Yeah, I hope so because I might have to rethink my network subscription for many months out of the year if there isn't, you know, only spin it up like 4 months a year for particular pay-per-view weekends, you know?
Yeah, some dollars. I don't see a reason to get rid of the subscription, just even if I watch one pay-per-view a month, and sometimes they have multiple pay-per-views a month, that's more than worth the $10 right there.
Yeah, it is, but I don't always watch them. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I don't but have I, a kid, I do, so I can.
I do always watch the takeovers, and I do watch usually the big four, big five events. I used to, you know, when I first got the network, I'd spend a lot of time watching old pay-per-views and old matches and stuff like that, but now child's older, so other stuff has to be on the TV, but, you know, we'll see. You know, it's good value either way. Tons of content.
And you need your ride-along.
Yeah. Ride-along!
Oh, man. Well, should we chat games?
Yeah, we should talk about video games, or at least video game.
Singular. Yeah, you got one to talk about this week. We're kicking things off with Catherine Full Body, developed and published by Atlus. It released September 3rd on the PS4 for $59.99.
Hey, that's the day of this recording.
Shocker. Our indecisive protagonist, Vincent, has been with his longtime girlfriend, Catherine, for 5 years. But instead of taking the next step into marriage, Vincent finds himself in an affair with a provocative blonde bombshell, Catherine. Adding to Vincent's dilemma, he begins having nightmares that force him to climb for his life. Will he survive the trials and tribulations or fall to temptation? Tim, tell us about Catherine Full Body.
Catherine Full Body. All right, so this is I wouldn't call it a remake. It's an enhanced version, a director's cut of the PS3, Xbox 360 game that came out like 8 years ago at this point.
Yeah, been a while.
That's gross. The passage of time. Always gross. Never gets better. Anyways, the original Catherine was one of my favorite games of that year. I loved the puzzle mechanic. I loved the kind of the pulpy story, horror romance story of it. And it was just... And it still remains, on replaying it now. Like, it's a pretty unique game in that it's a mashup of, like, adventure and action puzzle with horror elements into it and romance elements into it. It's still something, like, really that not a lot of games go for, at least, like, with AAA, triple-ish A. I don't know. Yeah, it's AAA. Money thrown at it. I'll say it's AAA, sure. It's not Gears 5, but, like, you know, it's a full-price product. So,
we didn't even talk about Batista being in Gears 5.
Yeah! Banner! That's pretty awesome. Anyway. The original came out PS3 360. This is an enhanced version of that. You have new modes, you have new options, you have the graphics have been updated to today's standards, and I think they look pretty great all around, just the character models and like the nightmare scenes where you're actually doing the puzzling look, you know, fantastic. Like, nothing looks dated about the presentation of this game at all. They have, you know, there's multiplayer stuff in there, online multiplayer, which I don't believe was in the original. I think it had like some kind of local thing, which is good because there is a Catherine competitive scene that is not insignificant.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they play Catherine at Evo. That's like a like on the anime Evo stage. They play Catherine competitively.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. It's like serious shit. Kind of the big thing is the addition of a new major character in the form of Rin, which is the pink-haired girl on the cover, who is now in the story. So yeah, the story, as I mentioned, is a kind of a pulp. The main story mode is called the Golden Playhouse. You know, it's kind of taking on a like grindhousey pulp, like late Saturday night movie sort of vibe to it. Part horror, part romance, and yeah, as you mentioned, it revolves around Vincent and his relationship issues with dealing with commitment to his longtime girlfriend and this other girl who mysteriously keeps ending up in his bed every night because he gets blackout drunk. And dealing with his infidelity and trying to figure out what the hell he's going to do with his life and drinking a lot. So the game goes back and forth. So you do have scenes that just are just basically just cutscenes, just straight up cutscenes. But as far as gameplay, usually the game picks up when you are at the bar, the Stray Sheep, in the evening, where you can walk around and chat. Well, you can sit at the table and chat with your friends. You can sit down with other patrons and talk to them. You drink. You can drink. Drinking makes you faster for the puzzle portions of the game. And you also get facts about alcohol as you get drunk.
Nice.
Yeah, but mostly, you know, you walk around, you can talk to the other people in the bar. You'll get texts on your phone and phone calls from the Catherines and Rin. Sometimes you will be sent salacious pictures, which you can only look at in the bathroom. And when you look at yourself in the mirror in the bathroom, you get an ominous warning regarding that evening's doo-doo-doo.
That was such a well-timed sound effect.
Ding! Yeah, I'm getting DM'd on someone sliding into my mentions on Twitter. Yeah, so that's the adventure portion of the game. And through Oh, also in the bar, there is this. There's an arcade machine called Super Rapunzel, which mirrors the gameplay of the block. You know, the main puzzle gameplay, but you have like limited moves, so it's kind of a little arcadey thing to practice, and gives you and just another little thing to throw more puzzles at you but integrate them into the game. But yeah, then when you drag your ass home to go to bed at night, that is when the nightmare begins. So Vincent ends up in this nightmare world where everyone looks like a sheep. He looks like a sheep to the other sheep, and the other sheep think that they're humans. But yeah, so you have to climb up these towers, and this is the meat of the gameplay here. So it's you have to like pull out blocks from the tower in order to push and pull and, you know, move around these blocks in order to make a staircase to climb all the way up to the top as the bottom of the tower is slowly falling off beneath you. It's fucking stressful. this game, I think had a bit of a rep at the time for being pretty tough. And it is tough. I, you know, as a vet who played through the original on normal and hard, and I was playing through this on normal with they have a new like remixed mode that they put in there, which injects these like larger Tetris looking blocks into the stacks that you have to deal with. Which doesn't change things dramatically, but it's a little different. So I appreciate that as a returning player. But yeah, I got about halfway through the story and I got to some levels and I was like, Jesus fucking Christ, this game. Like, just, oh my God, because it's throwing in elements of, you know, there's some blocks that crumble when you walk over them. There's trap blocks, which will stab you with spikes. There's ice blocks, which you slip on and will slip on other blocks. There's blocks that blow up. So just like figuring out how to do this stuff is fun and aggravating and rewarding. I really enjoy it because there's just like, you can get really creative with the way you push and pull blocks around. Like, cause if you push a bunch of blocks out from a row, then the stack above will fall down, which is sometimes helpful for getting you up a little bit higher. Like, you can push blocks across gaps so long as they will like touch edges with a block on the other side. So you can build bridges that way. There's lots of neat creative stuff you can do, and the game does a pretty good job throughout these sections. So you'll go through one section of Nightmare Staircase, Block Building Hell, and then you'll end up on a landing with a bunch of other sheep, and you can walk around and you talk to those guys. And there's always some that are sitting around talking about different climbing techniques. And so the game will have like a little demo which shows you like how to pull this off with different, and usually there's like a few tips and tricks at every single platform to give you new ideas of how to climb. On top of that, there is like simplified and easy climbing difficulty, which if you want to take a more story-based approach to the game, you can use those. Though I did find out that you cannot change those difficulty options in the middle of one of the nightmares. So like if you're like a few stages deep, yeah, you can't change it on the fly, which is something that I won't say that's what I was trying to do when I was getting stuck on this one stage and just wanted to progress further in the story, but maybe I was. So I'd recommend keeping a couple saves if you end up buying this game and playing it, just because it didn't seem like there's any way to go like back and change that difficulty if you're like really, really hyper stuck. But they do give you items. Usually there's an item seller at every kind of... you know, platform in the middle there that you can buy items from that will make some things easier. Yes. So that is the climbing. Oh, and every night of climbing ends with a boss battle where there's some giant demonic creature chasing you up the stack just to make things that much more stressful, which you know, could take the form of like, oh, it's Catherine with a K, like your girlfriend Catherine, except like she's like an undead bride, or it's a baby, or it's an ass that shoots hearts at you. that's Catherine.
Oh my lord.
Yeah, it's pretty something else. So yeah, and that's the gameplay side of it. So as far as the story goes, and the addition they made to that in the form of Rin, because I kind of thought, like, oh, they're adding another Catherine. Like, that's a neat side thing. But, man, like, new Catherine is everywhere. This girl is everywhere. She's almost, I would say, like, too much everywhere. Because, like, in the original game, you'd have, like, a scene with, like, your girlfriend Catherine, like, in the morning or sometime during the day. And you of course would wake up next to other Catherine with a C, the Catherine you're cheating on, girlfriend Catherine. This game's not confusing to talk about at all. In the morning, so it's like you kind of like go back and forth. Like there'd be a scene with one Catherine, scene with the other Catherine. Then you'd go to the bar, and you'd only communicate with them with like through like text and phone calls from there, and you wouldn't really see them until the next day so much. But like Rin. Her backstory is like she has lost her memory, and like Vincent stumbles into her. She's like running away from something, on the streets one night. And so she ends up getting set up with an apartment right next door to Vince's. So you see her during the day, like during cutscenes, usually there's one with her. Then she's there at the bar at night playing piano, but then she is also in the nightmare sequences, on those little landings between stages playing piano. So she like suddenly is kind of the most dominant like girl in the game. And I'm not, this is like one of the things I'm not sure about this game is like I'm not sure I like that better, because like on one hand you know, I like her as a character. She brings out like a different side of Vincent's personality, but also at the same time, I feel like it kind of, you know, as someone who played through the original game, it kind of distracts and takes away from that main dichotomy between the other two Catherines.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if I like that particular aspect more, just because they're like, it feels like she takes such a forward role in the game. I'm just like, I don't know that if in, you know, with all other things equal, like, would I necessarily say like someone should play this version of Catherine before the other version of Catherine just because of the story? Like, I feel like the story in the old one might be a bit better, but I don't know. Like, I really don't know. That is a potential criticism of this version, that there's just like so much random. And she even plays into the mechanics a bit too, because if you're climbing, when you're climbing the tower, if the thing is about to fall from under you, like suddenly like you'll hear Rin's piano playing and like it'll slow down the fall of the blocks for a second so you can try to get your shit together. So yeah, she plays like a big role in the game. So it's just weird having played through the game, you know, to completion like multiple times back in 2011, and then suddenly there's this new character that is like all over the place. But then again, it's just like someone who's coming to the game fresh, you know, without having played the old Catherine. I don't know if they'd really know or it would make much of a difference with them, you know? Yeah, it's just something that's really sticks out to me as someone who played and enjoyed the first one.
So break this down for me, both for new players and for returning players. Is this worth $60?
Yeah, probably. I think I like, so yeah, especially like for a returning player, like someone who loved Catherine, like the way I do,
you probably already own the game.
Yeah. You know, I'm coming in like I, you know, before review, like I was definitely, yeah. Yes, I was definitely eyeballing this game up for a long time back, because and it's impressed me with just like the look of the visuals. Like, I still enjoy like going through the story, the adventure portions. I absolutely love the puzzle mechanics of this game. Like, they feel so fresh and different. You know, it's not a falling block puzzler. It is not strictly a, you know, push like. It's the dimension to it. I think there's three dimensions to it. It's not just blocks falling down. It's not just like, oh, I need to push these blocks around to get them on a switch to get out. It's like, no, I'm pushing blocks out so that I can move upward. And there's a lot of things to consider. And the story, I think, you know, it has its, you know, imperfections for sure. Like, it is a very, you know, dude in his early 30s perspective on romance, which can be tiresome, I guess, to some people more than others. There's also the question, and there was some controversy when this game came out in Japan, like 6-7 months ago, over its treatment of some trans characters in the game, which, you know, is worth considering. There were, you know, I read up on what was in the original version, and there was some pretty shitty stuff in there. A couple of shitty things. But you know, I didn't see, so one of them, I'm not going to dive into spoiler stuff here. But one of the things that was brought up is one of the endings, and I didn't see that. There's multiple endings of this game. There's plenty of replay value. Which is one of the things I like about Catherine. you can tweak the settings, tweak the difficulty and play through it again. And see some different stuff. But one of the scenes that, and I should say, after this, you know, things kind of blew up, Atlas USA said they were going to be changing things for the American release. And there's a key point in the story, again, vague booking here, where there's a reveal regarding a character. And I did make it through that scene. I did see that scene. And it seemed to me like the scene that immediately followed it had definitely been edited quite a bit, I think. Just like there was a lot of weird cutaways and like there was some weird framing where like you wouldn't see the character's mouth. So I think they did a lot to change the dialogue, to change how the impact of the previous scene hit. I don't know if I'm in a position to say, like, oh, they did a perfect job, you know, with the handling of these characters in these moments.
Yeah.
But it's something that people might want to look into. I was kind of poking around today, and I haven't really seen any articles, like, but I know things have changed for sure. So that's something that's worth looking into for sure. But anyways, it's an imperfect piece of story and art, and I don't want to just, you know, throw those issues like under the table or whatever, like they're not important, but I thought it was worth mentioning. But as a game, as a product, I think it is well worth the price. They've added so much stuff to this game. I mean, I love the game to begin with, but it's certainly worth a replay. I would love for new players to pick up the game and check it out. But if you're not into puzzle games or adventure games, boy, are you not going to like this thing. it is a very, a bit of an odd mix, but I love like the whole vibe of the game. I think it's so cool. The game also has great music. Cause of course it does. Another Shoji Meguro piece, some remixes of like classical pieces in there. So yeah, it's still a great game. It does weird, like the whole Rin being all over the place thing is still weird, but yeah, this is probably the best, most convenient way to play the game. But yeah, I guess the worst I could say is if you're really interested in checking out Catherine, you've been waiting on this version, like you might want to play this one and then still check out the old one. Like it's almost different enough in the way the story is presented. Like I think it's worth seeing both versions, like with and without Rin. That's me, Catherine lover.
Yeah, I think the worst thing I could say about the game is I am incredibly disappointed that it is not available on Xbox One. The original game was on Xbox 360.
That does suck.
The lack of an Xbox version for this new release is a bummer. I think it might be because technically Xbox One players can play the original Catherine through the backward compatibility program. So maybe Atlas felt it wasn't necessary on Xbox One,
but
all these new features and new content would have been great for Xbox players. But people who still want to play the original's $20 on Xbox One, and it plays there, so you could check that out as well.
Yeah, Xbox One players, I totally recommend buying Catherine on Xbox One if you want to play it there. Awesome. Totally worth it.
Yeah. Tim, always a pleasure having you on, chatting wrestles and chatting about Catherine. Do you have any final words before we move on?
I do, actually. You probably did not realize this is actually an auspicious occasion for me on this podcast, and that this is my 100th review.
Really?
For the SML podcast. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So thanks for having me on and letting me get involved with all these games and spout my opinions into the void. I was kind of hoping for some nice symmetry and that like the first game I reviewed was River City Tokyo Rumble and that like River City Girls would be like the 100th, but that just isn't how it shook out. So
close. We got close.
Yeah, it was pretty close, but it was like two
spoiler
games.
Spoiler for future episodes.
Yeah, spoiler for future episodes that might be coming. Oh man. Oh, so much phlegm just showed up in my mouth. Oh, this is gross. Tissue. Ugh, sorry, that was gross. But yeah, so yeah, happy 100 reviews, and here's to the next 100.
All right, moving on. Jacob Garner's here. Jacob, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
I'm alive and kicking. Two reviews in so far. Well, this will be the second review, so we're still early in the show. I'm still feeling good. I guarantee you later on tonight, I'm going to be dragging ass. So.
That's unfortunate, I guess.
It is what it is.
Fair enough.
Show's got to get done. We got games to talk about, damn it.
Okay. I mean, I just started playing Destiny 2 last night.
Why?
Well, I mean, like, you know, John, he was just like, hey, like, you want to play that? Cause like, I know you're not going to be getting Borderlands. So I was just like, you know what? Like Joe had bought me the base game for like $5 like months ago. So yeah, I'll fire it up and holy crap. It's pretty fun.
Yeah, it is.
And then John bought me like all the friggin' DLC for it. So I'm like,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Holy crap. I was just like, dude, this is like, I don't even know how much that costs. Like, I assume it's a pretty penny.
Well, chances are he just bought you, like, the full bundle.
Yes. So. Yeah. I don't know. Like, what is that? Is that like $40?
I have no clue.
Jeez. I don't know. But anyways, I'm like, all right, guess I'm going to be playing this for a while.
Yeah, there you go. That'll keep you busy.
Also, at midnight, Torchlight 2 got released.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah. I haven't had a chance to fire that up yet. But
me neither.
Yeah, but I'm just like, all right, between Destiny 2 and Torchlight, I guess I'm just never reviewing anything for this podcast ever again, because I'm just going to be playing those for the rest of my days.
Well, at least I know not to count on you for anything anymore.
Do you actually count on me for anything, though?
Yes, of course I do. You are our tweeter and Facebook. You're the social media manager for the SML podcast.
Aw.
That's a lofty title.
It is. I even listed on my resume.
I know.
Along with video game reviewer.
I mean, that's debatable.
I review games. Hey, guys, I suck at this game, but you should try it out.
Speaking of sucking at games and telling people to try it, should we move on?
Yeah, because that's pretty much what it's going to be. And I've got a good story about the beginning of this game for you.
Oh, boy. Well, the next game to talk about is called WRC8 FIA World Rally Championship, developed by Kyloton Racing, published by Big Ben Interactive, releasing September 5th on the Epic Games Store, and in Europe, September 10th, it'll be out in America on Xbox One and PS4 for $49.99. The most complete and authentic official WRC simulation yet. New physics for all services, a completely redesigned career mode, dynamic weather conditions, 50 teams, 14 countries, 100 tracks, weekly challenges, and an esports mode. Jacob, sounds like this one is packed, huh?
It is actually really packed. I was really impressed with that. There is a lot to do in the game. I mean, it takes you a little bit to get started, although that could just be because I'm like, oh, I'm a novice, you know, because I'm always just like, yeah, let's start me out on easy for these.
Yeah.
And I also did the tutorial, which I was very impressive with, if I do say so myself.
Yeah, it's would a you like to know what my tutorial?
Would you like to know what my very first achievement was?
Do tell, because I can only wonder if it's the same as my first achievement.
I flipped my car.
Yes, it is.
Oh, well, splendid. All right, so I'm not the only one that sucked. Would you like to know what my second achievement was?
Sure, what was it?
Did not qualify. I failed the tutorial.
Okay, I'm better than you.
I legit friggin' failed the tutorial. And it even gives you like an option to like retry it. Yep, I still failed.
Oh my lord, that's beautiful.
And so like I had to start the game with like all assists on, even though like I'm also set to novice. The damage to my car beautifully was only set to visuals only, and I still managed to fail the tutorial. So,
oh man, that's amazing.
It is. And likewise, the game is actually pretty incredible in its own right. I mean, it's just like, I mean, it feels very realistic. I mean, like, especially like when you're going through those different tracks, like especially like the dirt, the snow ones. I loved going through the Sweden tracks. The very first rally, like the actual rally that the career mode lets you do. That was a blast, even though I finished last place every time I tried doing it. But it was just like, I do appreciate the fact that in the career mode, there's a lot of hand-holding if you don't know what you're doing, in terms of like, well, this is what this does for your car. This is what this person can do. This is what they'll bring. All that other kind of stuff. It'll explain the events. It explains, you know, how everything's going to work. And then it just pretty much lets you loose, and hopefully you won't suck so bad that like your entire team leaves you.
Did your entire team leave you?
Joe, I don't want to talk about it. Anyway, I think this is really the first time I've ever failed, like straight up failed a career mode.
I didn't know you could fail the career mode.
I don't have any money. I can't pay my crew.
That is amazing. So you have to start a new career.
I guess so. I had to stop out of frustration because I was just like, I'm just like, I don't know why I review these kind of games because I am absolutely terrible at all the realistic driving games because I just am.
You do them because I'm here to back you up by mentioning things like I really enjoyed the game. The visuals are insane.
Oh, that thing was beautiful, and I can only imagine what that looks like in 4K.
Oh yeah. The first time I played an extreme weather track, I know early in career mode you're able to test out an extreme weather event.
And oh, the rain with thing.
The hail.
How far did you get?
Not far.
Really? Like I kept making it to 85%, and it's like I couldn't make it any farther, and I was just like, I kept retrying that event too, like a bunch of times. Like it's really challenging, and it's just like the game never feels like, oh, like, you know, I'm gonna fuck you over. Well, actually, no, it does in a way, but I'll get to that in a moment. But it's just like the tracks feel fair, the physics feel fair. You know what I mean? It's just, everything feels very well put together. And I really, like, I did enjoy the challenges that, like, the different tracks presented. I just, you know, it's that specific rain course. It's just like, that's something I'm just going to keep playing and playing at, until I figure out what the heck I'm doing wrong. Unless it's me just existing and trying to play the game.
Yeah, that's probably the problem.
But the one thing that did drive me nuts about the game is that unlike other racing games that I've played, pretty much just about every racing game I've ever played, the game actually penalizes you for having to reset your car.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it penalizes you 9 seconds at least every single time. And the Sweden rally, which is the very first one that I can't get past last place on, every single time that I did it, my penalty time was actually enough that, like, if it was removed, I would have placed in, like, the top, all right, top seven, shut up, but whatever. You know,
yeah,
but
I have noticed
top half.
Yeah, you know? I have noticed it seems a lot easier to go off track and lose control of the car in this game than previous rally games. It feels it just seems like anytime I would go into any kind of corner, I'd be spinning out.
I don't know. It's like it felt, I mean, the thing is, to me, like, it made sense. Like, you know, when I did, it's just I wish like the penalties weren't there.
Yeah.
And I mean, I guess,
well, that's the sim part of it.
Well, right. And also the game creators could be like, well, you know, maybe just don't suck so much, you know? But you know, it's just, I don't know. If you're a beginner, that's not going to be, the game is a tad unforgiving. The only other thing I had real complaints with is that, for as much hand holding as it did, like when you're doing the actual race, like your navigator is saying, you know, turn left and it's like 40 and blah, blah, like he's shouting like all these numbers at you. And the thing is that I don't know what that means. I don't know what any of it means. I mean, I'm sure that, like, you know, fans of the sport are definitely like, oh yeah, okay. Like what he's saying, you know, makes complete sense. But for the uninitiated, for as much hand-holding as they did in the tutorial, they don't explain, hey, this is what your navigator's talking about.
No.
Which I
don't know. I kind of just picked up on it as I played the rally games that they're shouting basically the course out to you.
Well,
because it doesn't have any kind of mini-map or anything. It just has a gauge on the side telling you how far through the event you are. You have to rely on your spotter to tell you, you know, there's a hairpin left coming up in 40 meters or something like that. So that's the instructions that he's shouting out to you. I agree, the game could do a better job of telling you, hey, listen, this is what your spotter's talking about. You want to pay attention to him.
Right. So, and the thing is, like, I mean, it's not like I wasn't, like, listening to, oh, okay, that's a hairpin turn. Like, oh, what do you mean? I thought this was a straightaway. Like, I wasn't that dense with it. But, you know, it's just, like, I would have appreciated to understand, like, what he's talking about. Like,
yeah, overall. I can understand that.
So, I didn't get a chance to do any of the multiplayer. Didn't seem to be anybody online when I tried.
Well, that's the joys of playing pre-release. I had a game of, like, me and two other people go, which isn't really enough to test it. But, again, this doesn't hit the States until the 10th. So we're not going to see that many people playing it for a few days. Europe might have a couple of people playing as well, but I'm sure those will be at drastically different hours than we would be playing.
Right.
Like, I mean, 10 o'clock for us, I don't think they'd be playing much.
They might be.
3, 4 a.m. for them?
Depends on where in Europe, but it would be like a, I mean, it would be like early morning for them. So, I mean, you might catch somebody playing before work.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's one of the joys of pre-release reviews is we don't really have a good opportunity to test out the online play. If there's anything significantly broken with the online, we'll be sure to let you know in an update. But from the little I played online, I didn't run into any kind of issues except for finding a game because, again, pre-release.
Right.
So that's not the fault of the game at all.
Yeah, no. So.
But overall, $50 on this one. What do you think?
If you're a fan of this kind of game or like or just like car simulation, like racing sim games, like F1 that I reviewed. When did I review that? Last year?
Mm-hmm.
I think around this time. If you're a fan of like F1, even the Forza, like the regular Forza series, I think this is definitely right up your alley. If you're looking for an arcade game like Burnout or Cruisin' USA, this is not going to be your cup of tea.
Yeah.
But, you know, for what it is and for the certain kind of fans that it's going to attract, this is, yeah, it's a definite buy. But as I said, if you're looking for an arcade, look elsewhere.
Sounds good. Jacob, always a pleasure having you on chatting about games. Do you have any final words?
I'm always terrible at this.
All right, moving on. Chris Taylor's here. Chris, how are you doing?
Hey, doing all right.
How was your weekend?
Oh, it was pretty good. Long, which is what I always like. Had the day off today as well as, you know, the other 2 days. So
nice.
Got lots of gaming in. Started you know, of course I was streaming. I did some of my new Skyrim build. And also off the clock started working on another Skyrim build that I'm going to stream as well if I can manage to actually do it.
What's that one?
So the one I'm working on right now, like the one I'm doing right now is just a completionist run, so it has no restrictions, so I'm just playing Skyrim for people at the moment.
Yeah.
But the next one I'm working on is getting through the game on legendary difficulty with a level 1 cap. So, no how levels.
How do you cap it at level 1?
Just don't gain a level. there's an option in the menu where you go to look at your perks and stuff, and that's when you gain enough experience, that's where you go to level up. Just never access that, and you'll never level up.
Huh.
Yep.
I'll be damned.
Yeah. I know some people who have done it. Thing is, it's popular to do by speedrunners, but of course they glitch, you know, they do things like put horses in the ground and then teleport and then run at bullet speed and, you know, skip all the events in the game. I'm actually building a character that can beat the game at level 1, so I'm going to try anyway. It's really tough.
That is ridiculous.
Yeah. It's fun spending an entire hour trying to take down one Draugr. That's not going to bore people at all.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. My phone is going nuts. I meant to mute it. Okay. 3 people started streaming at the exact same time and it thought to tell me that.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Anyway, I got to go. It's time to watch some streamers. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, if you're in a hurry, should we get to the games?
Yeah, I guess so.
All right, you got three to talk about this week. The first one is called Root Letter Last Answer, developed by Kadokawa Games, published by P-Cube, released September 3rd on the Switch and PS4 for $29.99. Following the footsteps of Aya Fumino, a school pen friend allegedly involved in a tragic murder 15 years ago, explore the town, uncover clues, and use the letters you wrote to each other to track down her childhood friends for questioning. But perhaps these friends, now adults living a peaceful life, will not be eager to let their painful memories resurface. Briss, this sounds intense.
Yeah, it's surprisingly not that intense.
No?
No. Well, at least not as intense as the other visual novel I'm looking at, for sure. But Root Letter, which, of course, is actually spelled out with like a square root symbol, like a root symbol, mm-hmm. The math symbol. And then it's actually, yeah, Root Letter Last Answer. This is basically it's a visual novel, which for people not familiar with the genre means that the game is essentially text-based. Typically these games are text-based with illustrations, and the choices that you make throughout the thing will actually determine the ending. Basically a choose your own adventure book, if anybody remembers those, but in video game form, where it should be, because those books were unwieldy. But that's interesting. I played this all day today, and like it says I have zero playtime. I have no idea why that is. Basically this follows the adventures of a character whom you name, who is a male, I guess. I mean, I guess he would have went to high school 15 years ago, so he would be roughly about, like, in his late 20s, maybe 30. I think, yeah, about 32 is supposed to be his age. And, yeah, he's basically trying to figure out what happened to a pen pal that he had 15 years ago, who sent him he has a collection of letters from her, and a picture, of course. He very much, like, kind of fell in love with her. And then she sent him one last letter saying that she killed someone and that don't try to contact her. And then she disappeared. Basically it's about you live in Tokyo, your character, and you travel out to the Shimane Prefecture, which, I don't... It was interesting to me that that's the place that he went to, because that's actually where my girlfriend Catherine was living for a year.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah. And it's a small place. Like, it's very much like a specific place that, that she knows pretty well. And so she was able to confirm right away that a lot of the stuff in this game is real. Like, it takes place in real locations. And of course, it features the Shimane mascot, who is Shimaneko, which is a cat with a roof on its head that represents a temple nearby. Nice. And like, yeah, so it very much is a slice of Japan. It's very rooted in realistic locations that you could actually go and see for yourself if you wanted to. And having been to Japan myself, it actually, a lot of it does look like super familiar for, modern Japan. So anyway, so your guy walks around and like talks to people and finds the address that she used to write from, and it's an empty lot. And, the locals have said that, oh, that was a house that burned down 15 years ago. And the wife of the dude who, like, lived there died. And then you're like, well, did they have a daughter? And they were like, oh, she died 25 years ago. So he finds out. Exactly. Dun, dun, dun. So the girl that he was corresponding with in Tokyo, like, is either dead or hiding as someone dead, or is a criminal who decided to take on the identity of a little girl, who knows. And so he goes through the letters, and each letter kind of acts as a chapter in the game. And she names all of her friends in the first letter. And so, eventually, after asking around and having people like get straight up like hostile when you try to ask them about this girl, you decide to go around and ask all of her friends and like try to root out her location and, you know, if the person, you know, who the person you were writing with that you fell in love with, you know, who is this girl, and, you know, try to get to the bottom of it. Now the thing about this game is that it also kind of acts as a point and click puzzle game, in the sense that you do have a free cursor where you can look at any background and just sort of look around at things and either get flavor text, or you can actually discover items, or you know, trigger an event that'll get a person into your view, and then you can ask the person like several questions. There's even a think option, which allows you to, you know, sit down and think of what to do next, and that kind of acts as like a hint guide or lets you know where you are. And then, kind of cleverly, there's a smartphone, option, which is your save and load and, you know, do all your other things kind of application. So yeah, it's basically moving from location to location, asking questions and pointing at things and looking at them and choosing options. And every time a chapter starts and you get a new letter, you can actually choose part of, you know, you can kind of rewrite, the past and choose parts of what letter you wrote back to her, like, and it kind of determines who your character is, so you can write about what your interests are, and apparently all that goes towards getting a different ending. There's multiple endings in this game, of course, depending on your options. So the thing that I thought was really interesting about this game, and it actually made it feel like a lot more lighthearted than I think the description does, is that the way everything is presented is all with real photos and real actors, some of which are in ridiculous costumes and have really over-exaggerated facial expressions. And oftentimes when they come into your view, like the picture will like, it'll look like the camera's like zooming in on them, like comically and things like that. So it's like photos of actors just keep popping up, and it's very obviously like actors in costumes and things like that. And I don't know, like something about it was just like ridiculous, and yet it kind of worked. like there's no real animation apart from like just pre-rendered videos that are, you know, just kind of dropped in here and there. When you're talking to people, it's just like the frame around the person's still face, like moves around in a way that denotes like kind of anime style action and reactions. And of course there's a little mini game that sometimes plays when you're trying to impress somebody, because your character has the nickname Max, quote unquote, which means that he takes on everything with maximum effort or something like that. It is demonstrated in a restaurant early on, where you have to react in the maximum way to how delicious a bowl of noodles is. And what that happens is there's a circle that appears around somebody's face with a little line, like the circle kind of fills up on both sides. And the closer it gets to the top, you know, it's a time thing. So when it gets close to the top where the circle's completely full, you push the button, and then that gives the maximum reaction, and thus the result that you want, which is, of course, more information, etc. So, you know, there's different little ways to interact with this game, which I think is pretty cool. But mostly it's, of course, all about the writing. A visual novel has to be about the writing. And I would say that it's actually really interesting. They don't give anything away at the beginning, so you really do kind of get to discover this with the character. And the whole thing is like, it's not a scary game at all. It's in fact a YA game, so it's everything is written out pretty simply. It doesn't, like, if there's something that's specifically Japanese, they do spend at least a line of dialogue explaining exactly what it is, and you know, like, so you don't have to be like a particularly familiar with Japan type of person to get this game. Although I would definitely say that this game is, you know, made for people who either are or want to be overly familiar with Japan. So yeah.
Nice. Quick question. You mentioned that the interface is cursor based. Does it also have touchscreen controls?
It does not.
Really?
Yeah. Everything is done with the sticks. So, I mean, that's fine. you know, because you're hovering your cursor over something until it glows, and when it glows, that means you can interact. You can't interact with anything that it doesn't glow on, so in that sense, it would kind of actually waste more time as a touchscreen apparatus.
No.
But yeah, that has not been added at all. I tried.
Well, $29.99 on this one. What do you think?
$29.99. This one definitely has quality to it. I mean, clearly it's fully voice acted, except for your character. Your character is silent, but all the other characters are Japanese voice actors who do a really good job. And, you know, like I said, the photos look really nice. It gives you a really cool sense of, like, really talking to people in, you know, in Japan and, like, kind of getting that experience. So I do actually recommend this. And they are coming out with more of them. So, you know, it's would be best to get on the ground floor right now. Obviously, if action is more your thing, then visual novels are not for you. You know, you're never going to come into, like, anything particularly strenuous. It's really just a thing to, like, waste away a couple of days worth of sitting on a couch and reading and just having a good time.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I think it's good. This is definitely one I'm going to play until the end.
Awesome. Next game to talk about is called Omen Exitio Plague, developed by Tiny Bull Studios, published by Forever Entertainment, released August 29th on the Switch for $8.99. Zanzibar, 1896. Dr. Jake Huntington enlisted in the army to forget the loss of his wife, yet something sinister and ancient is about to overturn his life forever. Shadows that inhabit the confines of reality seem to converge all in one point, a terrifying disease that threatens to exterminate the entire human race. This sounds intense as well.
Okay, yeah, this one is actually intense. So Omen Exitio is another visual novel, and it plays out in a very, very reminiscent of H.P. Lovecraft kind of world. So, you know, all the familiar beats are there. You've got your, your heroic, well-to-do British white man who, of course, travels to the distant, mysterious land of Africa, and, you know, sees diseases there and tries to help. And, you know, it's all about kind of the results of that and, like, trying to both figure out what the disease is, how to get other people to understand what's going on, and just, like, running around all these different locations and boarding many different ships and doing all kinds of, like, basically choosing all kinds of paths for this hero to go on. Now, this one is a lot more involved, from what I can tell. It has a whole different system from Root Letter. And, you know, it actually is a lot more interactive and a lot more branching. So, yeah, it basically plays out about on a really old-looking book. And, you know, even though it has completely modern font, if that interface bothers you, then you should run now, because that's the entire game. And it is noted as being on average about 4 hours per read. And since you can get multiple different readings and endings out of this book, that means that you're going to be spending a lot of time looking at a brown-ass book. The entire game is extremely brown. Just letting you know that ahead of time.
Yeah, okay. The screenshots, a lot of brown, a lot of black, a lot of text.
Yes, lots of brown, lots of black, lots of text. That's exactly what this game is. However, like I said, the visual novels are all about the writing, and this one actually does have some good writing in it. I definitely always approach something inspired by Lovecraft with a great deal of hesitation, because dude was just like a straight up racist, and it's really hard to read his work with a modern lens. This game, thankfully, actually avoids that pretty well. I would say, given that it's an English person, you know, going around different continents of brown people, there's a very distinct lack of racism in here. So I'm relieved about that.
Good to hear.
Yeah. Like I said, this could have gone sideways very easily, but I feel like the creators did have good intentions. Giving this familiar type of story, but with a more modern sensibility. So anyways, so you have the book in front of you, and you just, you know, advance it by turning the pages. You can go back a page. Every few pages, there is some kind of decision. And when you make this decision, it is done. The game autosaves, so you can't reverse and do a different decision. No takebacks. It's a no takebacks kind of book. And, you know, it actually has more of a menu. So, and again, it all looks like it's taking place on top of a desk. So if you go to the left of the book, you'll actually see a map of where you are currently. And that map plays into certain choices. Like, you can actually choose to go to different places, kind of a la Carmen Sandiego, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, delve into different parts of the story there. And, you know, the story, you know, what order you do them in and what happens in those different locations will determine what ultimately happens in the story. And then, of course, you, then you move to the right and you have your different menus. So you have your items. Again, in this game, you get items. You don't directly use them. It's only to check what's there and to read a flavor text description of what it is, along with an illustration. They're used in the story, so you can't just, like, for instance, you get injured many times in this game if you don't pass certain checks, and I'll get to those in a second. But, yeah, if you, like, get injured, you can't just go to, like, a med kit and use it. You have to wait until the story presents you an opportunity to convalesce. Then there's another dossier of characters and, you know, just general notes that your character makes, and achievements. So if you make all the right choices and pass enough checks, then you actually do get a trophy, and you can pass or fail. And you don't know until you've passed or failed what is even being calculated, which can either be really fun or really frustrating, depending on your view of achievements. Because ultimately, you know, it's all going to lead to one of multiple endings, and that's what you're really going for. So, you know, the achievements are just kind of a, it lets you know what you can do next time around, I suppose.
Yeah.
And then the last page, and this is the most interesting one, you have your, it kind of looks a little bit like a passport, but it's your character's information. Jake Huntington, of course, and his address and, you know, his status, which as you get injured, it tells you what your status is. And the thing is about this game is that you can't die. You cannot get the story cut short. If you get injured, even if you're, like, inches away from death, then the story will usually save you somehow. but, you know, if you're an abject failure, that's just going to be reflected in the actual story. So, you know, you'll be described as, like, limping more, or you'll be described as, like, you know, just more pathetic, I suppose.
I kind of want to play this game and just do everything wrong now.
Yeah, exactly. The temptation's there. I mentioned checks. So there is actually 5 stats that you have control over that will affect the story. Just like a D&D RPG or anything like that, you have fighting, observation, medicine, agility, and speechcraft. You gain experience points for every choice that you make that is outside of the main choices. So if your character is, like, in a room and you have the choice to leave the room or to look around some more, you can look around some more and maybe gain, like, 2 experience points. And, like, you get your first level in any sort of, any of the stats at 10 experience points. And then 20, 30, 50, 60, you know, 40, 50, 60, 75. And then, you know, there's 8 total that you can get in any, stat. So, if maybe you entered a room and, somebody's there and, you know, you need to fight them, well, maybe 3 options will appear. You can either leave the situation, or, you know, there's just one option that has no qualifications at all, that's kind of like usually running away. Or maybe you would choose to fight the person, and then it would say fight next to the option, and that indicates that it's going to pull from the fight stat to see if you win. And or maybe it's like, just observe the situation and try to figure it out a different way, and then that might be the observation stat. So basically, as it goes, as the story goes, you're going to want to increase the stat that you're most likely to use to get out of a situation, and oftentimes there's not enough experience points to go to just, like, you know, dump into, you know, everything and have it all work out. So, you know, you might have level 2 medicine, but then the next check is a level 3 medicine check, and then you'll fail it, and then you don't get the experience points.
I will say that is one of my downfalls with digital versions of visual novels. I can't just cheat.
Yeah, no, you can't grind in this game.
I can't just be like, oh, you have to have this stat at this level. Oh, of course I do. I have every stat at every level.
Yeah, exactly. Now, there is a really good strategy that you can use that the game allows you to do. And that is that if you get to a page where you have an option that checks a stat, like fight or whatever, you can go over, like if you can save your experience points and then go over and like dump all your experience points in fight if you want to, you know, win this one. And so you can choose to raise the level of a stat before choosing the option. You know, but there have been situations where I was at like level 2 agility because I never really did much with agility. And then it's like I came up with an agility option. I was like, okay, cool. I'm just going to raise my agility right quick and then go and choose this. And I raised it up to level 4 and then still failed. There's that risk. The only thing I can tell you on that is just take notes as to what worked and what didn't and then, you know, come back later. But the game seems to track those options that you make so you can come up with a better strategy for next time. Because there's an option to completely clear all the choices that you've made. Either way, so the game actually does play a little bit more RPG-ish. Really, though, like, if you choose, you know, to fight and you fail, then it just describes how you failed, and then you just don't get experience points. Obviously, if you do win a check, that equals more experience points and thus more chances to win. So, you know, you don't have to just spread out all your experience points. You can actually choose like maybe 3 of them to work on the most and then just hope that the next check relies on one of those 3. You're actually most likely going to end up with like 1 or 2 different options. And so yeah, it actually becomes really fun like that. I do enjoy that. And then, like I said, yeah, as far as the content of the story, there's a lot of different things that happen. And again, the achievements kind of reflect what all the game kind of expects you to do. Like any novel from, you know, adventure novel starring a white British colonizer from this era, any female character that you run into, you eventually have a sex scene with, and it's almost like, yeah, the way it's illustrated is just silly. It's just you can see one butt.
Oh God.
Yeah, actually, there's a little bit of nudity in this game, but it's so. I mean, it's drawn, you know, pencil style on a piece of ancient parchment, and so it's not exactly shocking. But it, you know, because you're dealing with cults and cultism and things like that. Yeah, you'll see a boob or two.
Nice.
Yeah, you know, always nice. But one of the achievements that actually... Oh, and of course, there's also many different characters that you can have as partners in the game. And the story will try to kill them off. And if you don't pass enough checks, then they will get killed off. And then you'll fail like certain... you'll fail certain achievements. And I was like, I had to pretty much everybody killed off the first time that happened. And I was like, damn it. I could have saved them. I didn't even know how. So, you know, I'll try for that next time. It kind of doesn't matter because the story tends to kill everybody off. I mean, it's Lovecraft, so.
Yeah.
Or it's Lovecraft-like. My favorite one, though, is that I failed the achievement for Pyromania, and the description of it is, you resisted the temptation to set one or more fires in the last few months.
Oh, God.
Because it's almost silly. Like, there's so many situations that come up where as you're going to leave a place, you can choose to set it on fire. And apparently this is an achievement that you need to get if you want to, like, play a perfect game. You need to set every place on fire that you leave. Otherwise, you're not doing good enough by this game.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So, you know, the aesthetics of it are definitely much less than something like Root Letter. Like I said, everything is monochromatic drawings. They often use the same ones. Like anytime you're talking to a character, it's always the same portrait of them. If you're punching a character, there's just a generic one character punching the other, you know, visual. And there's only one song in the entire soundtrack that plays. And it's just like this general gloomy, intense music that I ended up just turning off for a long time. Because, yeah, this game, just like the last, you'll sit here and just while away an entire afternoon reading text, and you don't want to hear that one song the entire way through. So,
yeah,
you know, get yourself a Spotify playlist for this one, or just some non-distracting other video game music. Apart from that, though, again, I really like the writing in this. I really like the system for experience points. And, you know, I think it's actually really cool. It's not, nothing in it is overtly shocking. There's no gore from any of the illustrations that I could tell. Just like maybe a picture of a cut that just looks like a very basic cut. But, you know, all of the intensity is in the text itself. So it kind of does its job as in the novel side, if not as much the visual side.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, $9 on it. What is your verdict?
Well, $9 and it's just about as good as Root Letter. I would say, yeah, go for it. Don't expect too much flash in this one. It's very much a book more than it is anything, but I really like the interactivity of this one. And again, I like the experience system. And if you're looking for a visual novel that's on the cheaper side, certainly go with this one. You know, it's like I said, it's a kind of a bygone era or genre of adventure books. But at the same time, if you have a nostalgia or appreciation for it, then certainly go for it.
Awesome. Final game for you to talk about is called Legend of the Skyfish, developed by Crescent Moon Games and M. Gaia Studios. Published by Rattalaika Games, released August 27th on PS4 and Vita, 28th on Xbox One, 30th on the Switch for $7.99. Yes, a Rattalaika game is more than $4.99.
Whoa.
Legend of the Skyfish is a beautiful level-based adventure puzzler with a unique weapon and tool, a fishing pole. Follow the intrepid Little Red Hook on her journey with the Moon Whale to defeat the mysterious Skyfish. Use your fishing pole as a weapon or a grappling hook and upgrade it as you go. Chris, tell us about Legend of the Skyfish.
Okay, Legend of the Skyfish. Well, for one, it's a Rattalaika game, so you know that it's going to be quality for cheap. That is very much the consistent theme of their games. And yeah, this one is no different in those terms. It's a very cool, basically, it's a little Zelda-like. It has a, you know, top-down view with your character running around. The visual style, of course, though, is a lot more hand-drawn sprites and things like that. It has a look that actually it reminds me of something, but I can't figure it out, so whatever. But yeah, you play a girl from the fisherman village, which is, you know, they tell a little story that's voice acted at the beginning of the game, so I was already like, ooh, production standards, or, you know, production values. And, yeah, apparently these fishermen woke up an ancient evil because they were fishing too much or something like that, and said evil kidnapped this girl's little brother, so she has to go and save him. And in order to, I guess, do something, like diminish his power or something like that, you have to travel and defeat all the islands and defeat all the totems, which are just like these big statues that you have to destroy. And, you know, the funny enough, the statues are not what you think. They're not like boss fights. They just sit there and you just break them and then you're done with the level. But getting there, yes, you have a mixture of enemies who range from just like fish people that got mutated by the skyfish. They just run at you basically, and you know, you hit them with your rod and they pop into, you know, bits. And then you have things that like throw fire at you, and like, you know, different enemies that behave in different ways. All very predictable. However, once you've done 15 stages in a level or in a world and fight a real boss, then you actually go to another world that looks different, even though it's still just a series of islands. And the same enemies are there, except they look completely different now. So I actually kind of appreciate that about this game, is that they do actually give you a little bit of diversity in the aesthetic side of it. But yeah, it's all about, you know, pushing stones onto buttons, dodging spikes, you know, flying spike projectiles, and like, you know, going over timed spike beds and things like that. Very, like I said, Zelda-like. And but the cool thing is about it, like I said, the weapon is interesting. It's like I said, it's a fishing pole that you upgrade every now and then. And of course, the very first one has a blade attached to it, so it's basically a sword.
Oh yeah,
but they call it a fishing pole. It's like, this fishing pole has a blade on it. I was like, oh yeah, just like a sword, huh? But anyways.
Just like every fishing pole ever.
Yeah, just like every fishing pole, yeah. Went down to REI and picked up a fishing sword. Anyways. But you not only have the fishing pole, which acts as the sword, you also have a line that you can cast that has a hook at the end of it, and that actually plays more into the game than, you know, than most other things. So it acts a lot like the hook shot in Zelda. So, you know, if you hit an enemy with it, it drags the enemy over to you in a dizzied state so that you can attack them. It pulls rocks over those buttons, as I mentioned. It especially the main purpose of it is that it gets you from island to island, because if you find a yellow sort of tile that that looks a certain way, then you can attach your hook to that and then, you know, basically pull yourself across a body of water. And so that ends up like playing into everything from getting through the levels, of course, to even winning the boss fights. So that's kind of like the cooler gimmick to this game. And yeah, apart from that, you know, your life is displayed as hearts, of course, and the way that you get, like, instead of enemies dropping hearts, which they don't, you actually have to find hearts within the level. Now, they do restore all of your hearts, but you actually aren't going to be able to just defeat enemies and hope they drop a heart. You actually have to plan out your path throughout each of the stages. But if you die, there's no actual penalty. You just start the stage over until you win. So that's kind of nice.
That works.
Yeah. And of course, you get more hearts if you pick up stronger armor. Like I said, you can also pick up different rods that do different things. Some of them have a, you know, the first one has a wider energy arc, and the second one is an ice sword that slows down enemies when it hits them, and, you know, different things like that. You can pick up different lines that either do, you know, faster or farther, like slinging. And again, that will play into how you interact with most things in this game. And yeah, you know, past all that, it's just getting through each level, and they increase in difficulty on a pretty low curve. It got to about, like, I started the game and then suddenly I was on level 10. I didn't realize how many levels had passed because they all went by so quickly. But once level 10 got around, then it started getting, like, a little more challenging, and then, you know, started taking more than, like, a minute to defeat win a level. but I will say that I got through the entire first world in the first hour of this game. So it's a really good one, I think, for the younger set, for sure, because it looks really cool. It looks nice and friendly, even though, you know, you're facing a great evil or whatever. The animation style is nice and friendly. And of course, it has a little girl protagonist, and I always support that. But yeah, like, it's a game with a lot of charm. You know, you might end up finding the levels a little repetitive, because you, like I said, you have to get through 15 identical levels before, you know, it's just the layout's different, but everything else is identical before you get to a boss. And, you know, there's multiple worlds like that, so, you know, you might find yourself in, like, level 12 of something, being like, when will this be over? It's kind of the what would you call it, like, the Adventure Island sort of problem.
Yeah.
That they always start you in the same level. Actually, a game that did that to me the most was Boogerman on the Genesis. It would be like all these great levels and all these great designs, and they'd look really cool, but you'd have to get through like 6 or 7 of them in a row every single time. And so you'd go like through 50 levels to get to the end of this game where you should have just had like 10.
Well, overall, $8 on this one. What do you think?
I don't think there's been a Rattalaika game I've played yet that I haven't recommended. You know, these guys, They know what they're publishing. They publish good games and not for very much money. So that's the case here, and I think that this is a really good one to get. For sure, people who like the puzzly side of Zelda are going to really appreciate this one. Again, I actually think this would be a great game for the younger set, like kids with that are maybe a little more advanced, but, you know, I think they would actually enjoy this a lot.
Nice. So. And a quick note for trophy hunters and achievement hunters.
Oh, yeah.
This one is going to take a little bit of work to complete. You are going to have to beat all 3 worlds of the game. So you're going to have to buckle up, take care of the entire game this time. You can't just beat it all in 20 minutes.
Yeah, true. Although, you know, you do get a lot of trophies really early on.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, I really like that the trophy for the first time you use your hook to bring an enemy to you is called Get Over Here.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. I was like, oh, that's delightful. That's an old reference. Or is it? Is he still saying that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, good. It's good to know.
Yeah, Mortal Kombat's still around. Scorpion's still yelling at people to get over here.
Awesome. I wonder if they ever will.
Well, it depends on if they get a spear in the throat or not.
I guess so, yeah.
But Chris, always a pleasure having you on Chatting About Games. Do you have any final words before we move on?
Get over here!
All right, and finally tonight, Pernell Vaughn is here. Pernell, how are you doing?
Doing okay, though. Holy cow, none of that got recorded. That was quality content. Jeez. Oh, my God.
So we started our phone call or our Skype call at like 10:10, and it's now 10:42. We're just getting around to recording.
Pretty much. I feel like almost like a rule of thumb at this point is like, the moment I'm on, just start the record and then just cut it where you want. Like, okay, we started actually talking and it matters here. Just delete the rest. Because it's just conversation at that point. And
see, the problem is if I did that, the episodes would be, you know, like 7 hours long.
Oh, good point. Well, one thing you could do if you wanted like that little side knock, like that conversation we just had, for example, you could snip it right like where you said, hey, this is Pernell. You snip that and that whole thing could be like a little side content you just throw up on the side. Like, here's us talking about Rattalaika Games and some apples.
No one understands any of that.
Exactly. But they would. They listen to the bonus content.
You subscribe to us on Patreon, you get these special bonus.
Click, like, subscribe.
Get special Pernell casts.
Oh, dear God. I don't know, it would be wonderful. I was like, you know, I'm all about these special Pernell casts. He just came on one day and talked about how much he loves catfish. I couldn't say no to that. That's awesome.
We've had some odd conversations.
That's what I like, is like I think the odder the conversation, the better. And I also think that deep down, that's what makes quality radio too, because there's people that you can get that'll go on to the radio, for example, like on like NPR, and they'll just talk about a very specific topic and they'll just say, okay, there's a thing, and now it's over, and that's unfortunate, and back to the news.
Today, we're going to talk about rubber.
Exactly, and how rubber is made. But then you get those other guys who are like, they come on and talk about one thing, but their personalities explode as they do it, and out of nowhere, you have this whole show that no one else can reproduce. It's only their show. And there's something special about that. It's like, hey, you're going to tune in to get that personality and the information. It's a win-win situation, and no one else can reproduce it.
So what you're saying is I really should look into Patreon and having special bonus content for people who give us more money.
Honestly, my only thought on Patreon, I'm honest when I say this, it doesn't hurt. When Rhythm and Pixels did it, like, it wasn't even my idea. I thought it would fail miserably. I was like, man, nobody's going to subscribe to us. Who the hell's going to give us money to do the same thing we're going to do for free? And boom, people did. And to this day, I'm like, why the hell are you giving us anything? You don't have to. But they choose to. And it's awesome. It's like, hey, if you want to, I don't tell you no. And you'd be surprised who would. And I only say that because I was surprised. And I wager a lot of people that do Patreon are in the same boat. Like, because honestly, think about it. What would be the special content aside from like maybe some side episodes? Like, you're not going to be like, every week I'm going to dance topless on camera and you'll get to see all the vittles. Like, yeah. Get saucy. Like, you're not going to do any of that stuff. You'll likely do the same thing we do, where it's like, you listen to the show. We hope if you like it, drop some cash. You know, you get some, maybe some, there'll be some grum cutting room floor stuff you'll get to listen to. And other than that, thank you for your support. And for a lot of people, that's enough. It's a cool thing. Like, I've come to learn that there are some awesome people out there listening to these shows. Now, unfortunately, there may be one or two that get the entitlement kick going where it's like, I give you $1 a month. I mean, I'm entitled to your time. And it's like, you say, fuck off, buddy. But they are very far, few, and rare. For the most part, people are just generally friendly. And it's kind of nice. When you look at the news every day and it's like a constant wave of just like misfortune and frustration, to know that people are just like, out there, just like, I just want to listen to a cool show and have fun and relax. And if you people are awesome, all the better. I like listening to cool people talk about crazy shit, like butter. Butter.
Oh, we could have a butter conversation. Only for our Patreon followers. By the way, go to patreon.com/the SML podcast. I don't know if that's how it works because we don't have a Patreon.
have a buttermilk conversation. It'll be fantastic. You'll be glad you subscribe.
I'm sure if I did a Patreon, I'd get like three of our hardcore listeners would be like, you know what? Fuck it. I want to listen to what him and Purnell talk about.
Honestly, would that be so bad?
I feel bad withholding content.
Oh, it's not withholding content. That's the thing. It's like you just said, the reason why you wouldn't put it on the show is because you feel as though it would extend the episode length to be too long. No. So you would remove it. But if someone's hardcore into the show and they're going to send throw money out there to you, you're like, hey, I deleted this because it extends the episode's length to be too long. There's some like cutting room floor footage that we just throw out there. It's almost like the DLC dialogue that comes up sometimes where it's like, what's the difference between we withheld this stage because we knew people would pay for it versus, look, this game is already 50 freaking hours. It's hit its limit. But if you're really down with the game and you just want more content, there's this whole level you removed from the game where we didn't even build it yet because we stopped to just release the game. But you can buy it if you want more, you know. And admittedly, some publishers are good at doing that. Some publishers you can see through like a damn wet paper bag. Yeah. And I think that makes all the difference.
I don't know. Something to think on. If anyone actually listens to this dumb shit and is listening to this and you have your thoughts, shoot us an email, thesmlpodcast@gmail.com. Again, it's the SML podcast, not just SML. We've had people wonder why they haven't gotten replies from us. It's like, your email's smlpodcast@gmail, right? No, it's thesmlpodcast@gmail.com.
I think what's more disturbing is the fact that they're like, you didn't respond. Like, more like, why didn't you get a bounce back? Who are your emails going to?
I don't fucking know.
There's like some Russian group out there. It's like, ooh, SML bish bait. We'd love more letters. we can learn how Americans speak and reverse engineer this shit.
No, oh, Jesus. Anyway, speaking of things taking 50 freaking hours, should we get to some reviews?
None of my games actually take 50 freaking hours this week.
I just mean the episode's going to take 50 freaking hours.
True, true, true.
Everybody talks.
Everybody hurts.
Oh, man. So, yeah, next game to talk about. You got three to talk about tonight. Next one to talk about is called Gravity Ghost Deluxe Edition, developed and published by Ivy Games. It released August 6th on the PS4 for $9.99. Surf the night sky, careen through the cosmos, find the fox. Don't miss this genre-defying journey through the heart of the galaxy. When a ghost girl's best friend goes missing, she'll turn the whole universe upside down to find him. Purnell, tell us about Gravity Ghost.
Gravity Ghost is easily one of the biggest surprises in games for me in the last month or so.
Ooh.
And I was actually even surprised when you had the code for it, because if I remember correctly, I had learned about it through some weird means, and I told you, I was like, what a coincidence. I actually have the code right here. I was about to see if anybody wanted it. I'm like, gimme. Give it to me. I don't even remember how I learned about it. It was just a huge surprise, and I came away very pleasantly surprised and pleased with this game. It's, again, the beauty of the review sometimes, like, here's a game I would have totally went under my radar, but nope, not anymore. So Gravity Ghost, for the five people out there that have played this game, it will remind them of an old DS game that WayForward put out way back before people knew who they were, called Mighty Milky Way, in the scope of you are a character who has the ability to run around planets floating out in space. And each planet has its own respective gravity. And when you jump off the planet, you are launched towards whatever other planet is out there. Now, unlike Mighty Milky Way, with this game, the planet's gravity will pull you back down. So it's not as simple as if I launch off, I'm going to careen towards whatever new planet is out there. You have to actually be near enough a planetoid so that its gravitational pull will grab you and bring you in. So the premise of this game is you're careening through the cosmos, trying to pretty much put the planet back together. I have no idea why it broke, because I honestly accidentally skipped the intro Venom cinema scene. But it didn't ruin the game at all. It just makes it weirder to talk about. Basically, for whatever reason, the cosmos are shattered, and you're a ghost, and you're trying to find your fox friend, but in the process, you're also locating a series of other guardian spirit animals to put the planet back together. This is done as you are moving through each stage in the game, looking for an individual star that's located on the stage. And what ends up happening is you choose a level, you go inside, and there's a series of planetoids that will be floating around or spinning around or any number of ways that will be manipulated, that will be active. And you have to jump between the different planets, find the star, and get out the door that's on the one of the planets and move on to the next stage. But there's a few caveats to this. One, again, whenever you walk around planets, but whenever you leap off of a planet, the gravity takes effect. It'll either pull you back down or kind of send you careening out into space and you're trying to maneuver yourself towards another planet so you can grab onto it. So you'll find yourself bouncing from planetoid to planetoid and trying to manipulate yourself as you float to go to the places you want to go. Also, there is this really weird mechanic where your hair will continue to extend. And at first, it makes very little sense. So there's these like little stars that will be floating out in space. And as you fly into them, you'll collect them. And it'll make your hair extend out as like lengthy. It becomes lengthier and lengthier until it's like a huge trail outside of your body. At first, it just seems like it's a cosmetic thing. But there's an actual purpose to that, which I'll get into in a second. Actually, that second is now. So there are a variety of different planet types, like I mentioned earlier. Some planets are just basically hard. Some planets are like watery globes, so when you fall, you land on it, you actually fall into it like a pool of water. There are glass planets where if you hit it hard enough, you will shatter the planet and go right through it. But eventually you get the ability to terraform planets and turn them into other types of planets. So you might see a Earth planet transform, change to the water type, you know, ghost, walk around the planet, and now it becomes a water planet. So you'll fall right through it. So you'll be kind of manipulating the planets to make them fit more to your liking. And I like that a lot, actually. It became pretty fun. So you're doing, that's pretty much almost the whole game. You're pretty much doing that. You're going to collect stars on each of these stages. But also, there's a couple of levels where you'll come across spirit animals. And what ends up happening is you'll find two segments of them. Like, you'll find their bone, an animal's bones, and you can't do anything with the bones by default. But what you do later is you'll find animal spirit floating out in space on some of the stages. If you can collect that animal spirit and then take it to the stage that has its bones, you can resurrect the animal, and then it tells you a story segment of what the main character's life was like before everything went to crap. And there's a lot of charm to that, actually. Like, the first time I saw one of the cinema scenes, it did that thing that very few games do, but I love when they do them, and as it made me laugh, like, genuinely laugh. It's just not slapstick, it's just humorous. You know, like, a conversation that characters have, and one of the characters makes a comment that's just funny, you know? This game has a lot of that going on in the story sequences, and it's nice. You learn about these little characters and how their lives were, but in addition, they make it funny. So you'll want to collect all the animals just because you want to see how these story sequences work. And also, of course, you'll be finding other abilities too, because I mentioned earlier the terraforming, but there's some other abilities you can get too, which aren't really required. They're just kind of, they just make levels easier to work with. Like, you might find one ability where you'll become a heavyweight, so you can turn it on and you'll just become a heavy mass. You'll just careen towards whatever planet you're nearby because the gravity will take hold because, you know, your mass has increased. Whereas by the same token, you can get an ability where you become lightweight, and now you're just kind of floating out in space. So you're just, if you're going in a direction and you go lightweight, you'll just kind of glide like you're floating out in space. And it's really fun to just mess with that stuff. Now, obviously, the controls will get a little weird sometimes because, again, you're dealing with a series of gravitational pulls coming in different directions. You're worried about, I don't know, just the game trying to be like left is left and right is right. But if you're spinning around a planet, it might change depending on if you let go of the buttons or not. So you get used to that. But at first, it's a bit of a learning curve to go, okay, am I holding the right direction? Why am I going the wrong way? Oh, because technically I'm upside down, which means I got to go right, which is left. You know what I'm talking about. But, yeah, the game is honestly very solid. There's a lot of stages, though some of them are really short. Honestly, I feel like a lot of the stages are pretty short, but each one is satisfying. Like, I may be even a level where it's like I just do two jumps and then go off the door. And I'm just like, I'm having a good time. It's still fun to me. The music in this game is I don't want to say phenomenal. I feel like that's going overboard, but it's really good. I let it loop sometimes. I was playing it earlier this week, and I kind of let the music play while I was doing work in the kitchen. To me, that's a good praise for a game, OST, when it's like, I just let it run while I did other stuff around the house, because I like the way it sounded. It's good music.
It's the same composer of FTL, Faster Than Light.
Really?
Yep, same composer.
Did that guy also do Dungeon of the Endless, you think?
I don't know.
I'll have to double check, because if that's the case, holy shit, this guy's got the pedigree, because, yes, those are great OSTs, so good, all those OSTs, but, yeah, this game is 100% on the level. I did not expect it to be what it was. I came across it, you gave me the code to review it, I played it, and I came away extremely happy with it. I recommend it to any person who's a fan of puzzle games. It's really freaking good. I hope I did a decent job of explaining, because I did jump around a lot, because that just goes to show you how freaking excited I was about the game that I could actually even do that. And I was like, I'm going to gush for a bit. And I did. So
yeah, sounds really cool. I don't know if there's any chance of it hitting Switch or Xbox. I know Ivy Games, the developer there, is also a quest designer at Guerrilla Games, which is a Sony studio for Horizon Zero Dawn and Killzone. I don't know if Ivy Games is allowed to release a game on competitor consoles, or if she's free to do what she wants, but it'd be cool to see this other places.
Yeah, because it honestly is a game that I think people would be happy to play. It's a good time.
Yeah, it sounds really good.
I love how I was like, I didn't even have to do try, denied, or buy it. It's inferred. You know what I'm going to say. Know it.
Well, then tell us. $10, what's your verdict?
I deny it. This isn't very good. It's a terrible game. Dick. Wasting my freaking time. No, it's really good. I would definitely claim it as a buy it. And for the price, I think you're definitely getting your money's worth. Like, I could see someone coming in and going, some of these levels are really short. But the game's $10, and there's like 70 stages in it. I think you'll do fine.
Actually, 100.
Wow. That means there's bonus levels that I didn't get to yet. Point is, I love it.
The PS4 version actually has more levels.
Oh, hence the deluxe edition.
Yeah.
Sometimes deluxe edition is just blowing hot air, so I just kind of ignore it half the time. It's like, deluxe edition, because it comes with a wallpaper. How's that deluxe for the game? It has nothing to do with the game. The wallpaper has nothing to do with the game. But in this case, it sounds like they delivered.
Indeed, they did.
Worth it.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Air Memories of Old, developed by Forgotten Key, published by Daedalic Entertainment, released August 28th on the Switch for $19.99. The gods of old are forgotten, lost in the events that shattered the world, leaving only fragments of islands in the sky. This mystic world of endless skies, colorful islands, and ancient runes is in danger of falling into the darkness. As one of the last few shapeshifters, you are sent on a pilgrimage to the land of the gods. Uncover the secrets that will help save reality itself. Pernell, did you save reality?
I guess I did, but there was no combat involved whatsoever. And it's kind of funny. I was originally preparing to go into this review if you remember correctly, I was going to review this last week, but I was like, no, let's put it off till next week, because there's other games on the docket and everything.
Yeah.
But I'm glad I did, because originally I feel like I was going to ding it for something that I'll bring up in a minute. But over time, after playing it a little bit more and just kind of taking it in for what it is, I changed my mind. So, Air, you are, like you said earlier, a shapeshifter, part woman, part bird, all awesome. And your job is to seek out a series of temples and acquire the life, this like basically a life essence that is needed to pretty much halt the encroaching evil that is going to wants to destroy what's left of the world, being a bunch of interconnected sky islands. So, as the character, the way the game works is that there's two forms of the character. A human form, which can be used to walk around, jump, and then manipulate a lantern that she gets very early in the game to light different areas and every once in a while illuminate puzzles or display the spirits of their ancestors through the form of, I guess, like a mystic illumination. I don't know how to describe it. And in the other form, the awesomer form, is that of a bird. So I want to say it was like February of this year. I reviewed a game on the show called Vane. And Vane was a game where you were also a bird. And they also promised, you know, awesome flight and whatnot. And while it did deliver, one thing that it kind of didn't have is, you know, life, in that the world that you flew around in was completely dead. Whereas in this game, every island, even with the minimalist graphic style that they went with for this, all the islands look beautiful. They're very colorful. You get a desire to see them. Like, it's not dead space. It just looks nice. There is almost nothing on half the damn islands as far as the collectibles and stuff go. And you might not even care. I've done times where I just kind of careened a dive bomb into an island just to walk around and see the stuff they put on it. And it was beautiful to see. But honestly, flight in this game is this best feature. When you turn on that bird, you just kind of scream through the sky. You can press the button to flap your wings to get elevation. You can dive bomb. You can rise up into the sky. And then when you press the B button, you can return back to the form of a human. And you maintain the momentum you had while you were the bird. So there's some fun elements, just like, again, flying in the sky. And then just turning back to a human, just like missling onto a landmass. Admittedly, you don't die because the game doesn't have a death element. It's just like a restart, if anything, on certain areas. So you don't die when you crash on an island, but it just looks cool to be like boom, missile. So the way the game flows is that there almost is no flow. There's no required structure for how to get through the game. They just give you the map. They tell you to explore it. You do come across NPCs that will occasionally tell you, like, hey, you might want to start on the Northwest Island. That's where I would go to get started on your quest. But for the most part, they expect you to do whatever you want as long as you ultimately complete the goal of exploring the three temples and getting those essence items. Aside from that, you can find them however you want, fly and look at all the different islands in whatever order you want. Because there's no upgrades in this game. There's no items to collect in this game. There is no leveling up. You are the bird woman you were destined to be at the very beginning of the game, with the exception of getting the lantern, which, again, is pretty much at the beginning of the game. So you are free to do whatever you want, which means that you'll kind of wander around. You might come across an island that has a scroll on it, because so much like how, like, certain games like Zelda might do it, there is, like, lore items hidden around the world that will give you more context on what the world is like, you know, like why it is the way it is, what your ancestors felt about it, stuff like that. And it's your choice whether or not you want to find those things or not. All in all, though, the game is really short, but it's a quality short. Like, I enjoyed every aspect of this game. I do wish there was more combat, which is the thing that I was talking about earlier, where I was like, oh, man, the fact that this game has no upgrades, no combat, I don't know how I feel about this. I want more to it. But the more I got into them, I was like, you know, I'm happy with this. They're not going for an epic. They're going for a succinct story. Yeah. And they accomplished that. And honestly, just that joy of flying around and exploring the dungeons every once in a while, solving a few puzzles to get to the end, it feels good. Feels nice. I do wish you could become the bird inside the dungeons, but I guess that would make it a little too easy if you could just fly everywhere. Here's a platform puzzle. Fuck that. I'm a bird. Nah, none of that. So, unfortunately, you can't be a bird in the dungeons, but you can be a bird everywhere else.
You can't get easy mode, Purnell.
No, you can't. And honestly, I probably wouldn't want it any other way.
Well, $19.99 on air. What do you say?
I want to say it is a buy it if money is no object for your time. Otherwise, it might be a try it more so. But I think it's a quality experience. It's just a matter of how much it's worth to you for the time you get out of it.
Yeah. Sounds good, though. What the hell was that?
I don't know. It was me trying to imitate her voice, but she actually never talks in the game, either in human or bird form. So, I don't know. I'm assuming that's how she would sound if she was a bird, when she's a bird.
Oh, my God.
That's the stuff.
All right. Well, one final game to talk about tonight is called Devader, developed and published by Falcon Brew, released September 2nd on Steam for $14.99. Devader is an intense 90s-style twin-stick shooter complete with old-school crazy bosses, powerful strategic abilities, and multiple endings. Upgrade your robot with nukes, shields, turrets, and more to exterminate the relentless invaders. Brunel, tell us about Devader.
When you said this game is intense in that description, you were not kidding. This game is off the wall as far as stuff that's going on on the screen at one time. You are basically a tiny ass robot on a map that is one large rectangle. There's scrolling involved, don't get me wrong, but it's just one large rectangle. You never go to a different map. It's always that place. And the way it works is think like how Robotron was in the form of like enemy waves coming at you, or maybe more like Smash TV. That might seem safer because Robotron was weird how they did waves, but in Smash TV. So the way the game works is when it starts off on each level, your robot gets beamed down to the surface of this planet, and you are supposed to be protecting what they call the Matrix, which is a, I guess, a civilization that's being protected by like hexagonal bars. And it starts out at 100% capacity, as in like it's undamaged. But as you play each wave, monsters will just spawn like crazy all over the damn place. And there'll be whether spider mechs or black sludge monsters, or just there's a lot of weird monsters in this game. But basically, they all want to destroy that Matrix. They want to tear it down. And your goal is to kill them before they can destroy the Matrix. So how is this done? With raw firepower, of course. You start the game out with a basic pulse rifle or base or whatever it is. And you just pew, 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 you fire it. As you run around, every once in a while, power-ups will show up on the map. I honestly cannot describe what half the damn things do because, again, it gets so chaotic on the screen, and I was playing on a laptop. I was just seeing things and picking them up and hoping they did something for me. Every once in a while, I know one of the powers will like make my gun fire, you know, stronger bullets or with like an extra stream of bullets. And there's definitely a power where you'll actually get like shield bonus. You'll get shield health back, which is obviously your health bar. When you run out of shield and get shot, you die. So, and there's also like basically just like base powers, like they're just stronger weapons and shields. Now, every five waves or so, a boss enemy will show up, and the bosses get to be pretty extreme. Like it starts out with something small, like here's a giant spider mech, and then eventually becomes ridiculous multi-screen worms that are like crawling around and firing like bullet hell streams of bullets at you. And it gets to be a bit manic. But if you defeat the boss, you get beamed up and back out away from the Matrix. You'll get a quick little story screen with some text, and then you'll be sent to the upgrade screen. On the upgrade screen, they give you two upgrade points, which can be used on a variety of things, whether it be health per turrets or an extra life in case you die again, or increase firepower, increase speed, etc., etc. But then after that, an interesting thing happens. You'll get access to a new ability, or more specifically, they make you choose one. So it might be, hey, you get an access to a drone. You either get a drone that is good for supporting your defenses, or here's a drone that's good for supporting you with attacks. Or here's a new ability where you can now let the gun charge for a second and then fire a pulse wave. Or you can let the gun charge for a second and then fire a recovery shield or recovery shield. So the game will constantly, after every five waves, gives you a new ability, but make you choose which one you want. And that will very much affect how you proceed with playing through the game. So with me, for example, I focused on things that gave me raw firepower, but required me to actually aim the shots better, as opposed to just like willy-nilly shots, but they're weaker. Like, screw that. No, I'm precise enough. I want to do damage. So I took most of the upgrades that allowed for things like that. And nice. I honestly enjoyed it very much. It's chaotic as shit. And like I said, there are things that I didn't even, like, to this day, I got to, I got to, like, wave, like, I think the highest I got was, like, wave 45 or so.
Damn.
And, yeah, I was up in it. And I still have no idea what some of the powers were doing when I was picking them up. I just grabbed them because they were there. and they did do something for me because it helped me survive. I just didn't know what each specific type of thing did. I just grabbed it and was like, oh, thank heavens, it's working. But the experience is great. As I have to do with every game I talk about, the music of this game is also very good. It's very intense and pulse pumping, so it is very well suited for the intensity that you're going to be experiencing with this game. It's surprising. I don't know how to describe the difficulty, though, because on one hand, I was inclined to say initially that this game is really tough because of how chaotic and manic it is. But by that same token, I was surviving somehow, which implies that it's skill-based and that it's not just beat your ass hard. It's more like if you've got the moxie, you'll just roll with it. Maybe you'll just plop down and just do well. Though I used to play Enter the Gungeon, so maybe I just carried some skills. I don't freaking. But the point is, this game is manic, and you'll have to come in ready for some manic gunplay. But it's a good time if you can sit down with it. And I honestly like the fact that you don't get every upgrade on every playthrough, which means that every playthrough, you can kind of run through a different strategy to see how well it plays out for you. It's a good game. It's a quality game. I would like to see it come to consoles, honestly. because this isn't the kind of game where I feel like you, like, I mean, and it's already suited for controllers. I didn't bother with a mouse and keyboard. I just used the controller. I feel like it's
well, hopefully well, if the developers listening, God knows I would love to see it on Xbox, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
The Switch, I'm sure, would be perfect for it if it could handle it.
I don't see why I couldn't, but honestly, it's hard to tell with the Switch. I'm not quite sure what its true capabilities are. Some games that it seemed like it wouldn't have issues with, it does, and vice versa.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what the deal is there. But
I guess PlayStation 2 as well. I mean, might as well.
I suppose.
Let's include everybody. Let's get it on everything. It sounds really cool. I would love to play it.
It's a good game. I think, honestly, you would. I think you'd enjoy it. It's a good time. I do wish that if it was even possible, but maybe it's not because of the scope of the game. I wish it was possible to zoom in, even if slightly, to get a better view of the ground. Because, again, you're a tiny ship, and there are some tiny enemies, and there are some massive enemies. But it'd be interesting if there was like a, you could even if it was something you unlocked, just as a sub mode where it's like, hey, magnified mode, so it zooms in more, which means you see less of the screen, but what you do see is more detail. It'd be an interesting little side thing to unlock in the game, and watch it come. I was like, actually, you can unlock it. You just suck too much. You haven't done it. Like, geez, guys, don't be so hurtful to me. I'm good. Also worth noting, though, by the way, is like every level, after every five stages, they do a score calculation. And I barely even paid attention to it, which is interesting because so the game, like, the score goes in like the billions and millions. And I'm just like, okay, I got a lot of points. And I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just doing it and having fun with it. So when I died eventually, and again, it's like only really like 45 or so, the game showed my score. And the top score was probably four times my score. And they stopped at wave 20. So I was like, what the hell did this guy do differently to not only die before I did, but quadruple my score? What the hell's going on?
Yeah, seriously. Is there a multiplier or something that you weren't paying attention to?
Honestly, it's possible because, like I said, when they do the grading, there's like a series of items on there, like maybe like your turret health or your health or how many things you shot. Or I don't know. That's a lot of shit. And each of the scores is accompanied by a multiplier. So some conditions are worth more points than others, but they all ultimately contribute to the final score. It's just, hey, if you're really good at that thing that's worth a lot of points, look the fuck out. Because you're going to make a bandit on the score sheet, and that guy probably did that.
Damn. Well, overall, $15 on Devader. What do you say?
I think it's solid. I think it's worth that money. If you're looking for a twin stick shooter that is kind of different because I can't think of too many twin stick shooters where the goal is to defend a place, I think it's great.
Awesome. Sounds good.
I also think it's grape.
No, that's a fruit, Pernell.
Why? I want it to be a condition. Why can't it be a condition?
Don't know.
This game is grape. This one's more strawberry. Maybe when it becomes more of a mango, I'll buy it.
Aren't you glad this episode is over?
Delicious.